Random House Audio presents The Third Secret by Steve Berry. Read for you by L.J. Ganser. Fatima, Portugal, July 13, 1917. Lucia stared toward heaven and watched the lady descend. The apparition came from the east, as it had twice before, emerging as a sparkling dot from deep within the cloudy sky. The lady stood upright, her crystallized image clothed in a glow that seemed more brilliant than the sun. Lucia lowered her eyes in response to the dazzling beauty. A crowd surrounded Lucia, unlike the first time the lady appeared 2 months before. Then it had been only Lucia, Jacinta, and Francisco in the fields, tending the family sheep. Lucia stared hard at the lady. The form was transparent, in varied hues of yellow, white, and blue. The face was beautiful, but strangely shaded in sorrow. The lady opened her clasped hands and spread her arms. A penetrating radiance poured forth and bathed Lucia in a warmth, much like that of a winter's sun on a cool day. She embraced the feeling, then saw that the radiance did not stop at her and her two cousins. Instead, it passed through the earth, and the ground opened. A sea of fire spread before her in a magnificent vision. Within the flames, blackened forms appeared, like chunks of beef swirling in a boiling soup. They were human in shape, though no features or faces were distinguishable. They popped from the fire, then quickly descended, their bobbing accompanied by shrieks and groans so sorrowful that a shudder of fear crept down Lucia's spine.
The miracle of Fatima. Religious miracle or something from another time or another world. Hello, this is Jerry Pippin, and welcome back to the show. On the line from Portugal, we have Joaquin Fernandez and also Fina D'Amata. They have written the Fatima Trilogy. One of those books is The Celestial Secrets, The Hidden History of the Fatima Cover-Up. Alexandra Bruce was the translator for that book here in America, and she is on the line from her home near the beach on Long Island in New York. Alexandra is also the interpreter for today's show. All three of you, welcome back to the show.
When we talk about this event, why did it stop after 6 months? I mean, did it just all of a sudden come to a halt?
Ele está querendo saber por que que parou. Simplesmente parou depois de 6 meses.
Parou as aparições.
Ah, porque foram 6 meses, foram 6 meses, sempre à mesma hora, que ia acabar no 13 de outubro.
Ok. Actually, the apparition herself said that she would always appear on the 13th of the month at the same time of day, which is actually a numerological challenge when you consider that the months had different amounts of days in them. So Fina likes to point out that it's also a numerological phenomenon, because to appear on the 13th of every month was also a feat in itself, because the months had different amounts of days in them. And the apparition herself said, I will appear at X time every day on the 13th of every month for 6 months, and then it will stop. And she says that this apparition very much corresponds with a Roman and Greek and also ancient Lusitanian, who were colonies of these bigger empires previously, of the cult of Persephone, where she comes to, I guess Hera would be her mother, I don't know, it's Ceres in Greek, in Roman, the goddess of the earth, you know, who has to do with the crops and everything like that during the summertime, and the deal with whatever the other god's name is, where she has to go to hell for the winter months, and it's part of an ancient Greek myth.
Six months
here, and 6 months on earth with her mom growing crops, was in hell with her husband, the devil, or whoever he is. I'm forgetting the names of these Greek gods, but you can look them up. You know, Greek and Roman. I mean, this is really old stuff. You know, remember Persephone ate the four pomegranates and whatever, pomegranate seeds. I'm not very great at that stuff, but...
Well, you're doing fine.
And then actually, so that's what it was. It very much corresponds...
So this happened...
Ancient Greek mythological stuff.
Yeah, so...
Start labeling it UFO again. It's just almost like, you know, it's imposing a 20th century read on something that's interdimensional and millennial, because people had been having sightings of goddesses.
So basically, it started in the spring and went through the summer and stopped in the fall.
Yep, it stopped on October 13th, and she said that's when it would stop. And it started in, I think it was either May or June, whatever, 6 months.
What time of the day? Always the same.
Meio-dia solar, e tudo tinha a ver.
Okay, this is very interesting. She says that she always appeared at noon, at midday, that she was a being of light, and that, of course, the name, the Roman name of Portugal was Lusitania, which means land of light, and that it all, you know, it's all kind of one meaningful sort of system of synchronicities here.
Now, in their research, they mentioned three... beings, perhaps, being seen in some object that might have been a UFO. Were these beings different than the image of Mary?
Okay, that's a very good question. Poderia saber se os seres, os entes que foram observados pelas pessoas naquele disco voador que vocês descreveram que começou dois a do imã, então foram dois a do imã.
Alright,
well, the thing is, the three beings that were seen within this discoid-shaped object that went, turned from a silver disc into a transparent disc, three beings were seen inside this transparent disc, and actually one of them put his hand out, which was, these beings were interpreted the only way that was possible for Portuguese peasants to interpret anything that was as strange and miraculous and as what they were seeing, which was they were seeing Saint Joseph, Mother Mary, and baby Jesus. And that the baby Jesus, holding his hand up, was blessing the crowd. That is how they were interpreted and seen by the masses, because that is the only paradigm they could work within.
So they were humanoid.
They were humanoid, yeah, and one was perceived as female and two males.
And now, when we talk about this, I mean, this is almost 100 years ago.
Yes.
Anything like this ever happened since? In other words, has there been anything similar to this reported in Portugal at all?
Poderia saber se houve...
Nem no mundo,
okay. She's saying not even anywhere. Something like this.
Plano foi cumprido.
This was a planned thing. It happened at noon on the 13th of every month for 6 months. Nothing like this has ever happened since in Portugal or anywhere else on Earth, as far as, you know, that's been recorded. So.
And it's a mystery to all of us on why it happened. I mean, is there a message here? Was it a religious message?
Ele quer saber se é mistério absoluto ou se tem uma mensagem. Que vocês,
eu acho que tem mensagem.
She's saying that, first of all, you have to understand that the messages were given only to one person, and it was a 14-year-old girl who was illiterate, because there were no school. Girls were not, especially peasant girls, were not going. There were no schools for girls in Portugal at that time for the peasant class certainly, and that the primary message that Lucia received and interpreted and gave to the prelates and to the other priests and et cetera who interviewed her afterwards was that the woman was telling her to read and to learn, and that it was a shame that girls didn't have access to education in Portugal.
So, basically, it was a message given to one person who was illiterate, female, not getting a chance to have an education because of so it's an equal message. I mean, equal opportunity type message.
As I said, it sounds like, was it like a feminist message? Because, you know, what is this? And she sort of giggled, and she just said, que mais, Fina?
Portanto, há o círculo, que é curioso. Ou seja, o terço...
Okay, yeah, I'm going to get into that also, right. But this is where I start to sort of get in over my head, because I was not raised Catholic, and I don't know too much about the rosary, but much of what the being... referred to Lucia had to do with the rosary and with a certain part of it. The rosary is a large chain of beads,
yes,
you know, uh-huh. Cross on it.
Yeah,
it all represents another prayer, and it's like a you know.
And what part of the rosary are we talking about?
It's called the third in Portuguese, and I don't really know what that means.
Well, we'll try to find out.
It means the third. So there's a segment. Okay, and this is very important, because she says that there is a segment of the rosary that actually is a molecular replica of the female chromosome, and much also of what the being was telling Lucia had to do with roses and a circle of roses. I don't know if I'm translating this correctly. Basically, it was a feminist messenger. Certainly that is Fina's interpretation of the events, is that it was something of a feminist message.
You know, Alexandra, I'm not Catholic either. Maybe we could ask them this may sound like a silly question, but a lot of us probably don't know. What's the origination of the rosary? How did that get started?
Isso na sua religião, porque a gente não entendeu bem. Olha, o terço, dizem que surgiu no século XII, e curiosamente foi um ser de fora, uma Nossa Senhora que apareceu a São Domingos. O São Domingos foi que depois gerou os dominicanos. E foi São Domingos que esteve também à frente da Inquisição.
Yes. This is very interesting stuff for people who don't know about the history of the Catholic Church and the various saints and the histories of the saints and how so much of European history is driven by the history of the Church. And so I'm going to relay to you the origin of the rosary was, again, an apparition of Saint Mary to the man who eventually became canonized as Saint Dominic, who was a Castilian nobleman priest to whom the Virgin Mary supposedly appeared and revealed the mystery of the rosary, which is a beaded necklace that is structured in such a way that you can put your fingers over it and know which prayer to say. It's a set of Hail Marys and then a couple of Our Fathers and then more Hail Marys. And that's what the structure of the beads are, and instruct you and remind you which prayer to say as you go. And I also wanted to mention that St. Dominic, in the history of the Church, was associated with the Inquisitions against heresies, and he's the saint who protects against heresy.
Well, that answers that question. I have another couple of questions about the Catholic faith. But first, let's pause so I can talk about Bose, one of our sponsors. Don't go away. We're all familiar with the famous Bose name when it comes to great sound. And now, Bose has made it possible to enjoy your iPod music and programs in the fullest possible fidelity. Just slip in the iPod into the docking cradle
And instantly, you will have the famous Bose sound system playing your downloaded digital audio. By the way, the iPod charges as it plays on the Bose machines, so you always have the programming without interruption. Bose gives your programs from the internet vitality and realism, a full, rich sound. The Bose sound dock requires no adapters or wires. All you do is use one of the specifically designed iPod models. We have a banner on this page where you can click and go over and read about the Bose sound dock machine and the iPod. In fact, you can order it right here, right now, or in the future at your convenience. Bose and iPod, a marriage made in audio heaven. Welcome back to the show. And on the line from Portugal, we have Joaquim Fernandes and Fina da Mata. They're the authors of a Fatima trilogy. The first two books are out. One is called Celestial Secrets, The Hidden History of the Fatima Cover-Up. And the translator for that book, Alexander Bruce, is our interpreter today. She's on the line from her home on Long Island in New York. The first book in the series was called Heavenly Lights, The Apparitions of Fatima and the UFO Phenomenon. All three of these books are available from our shopping site. If you'd like to order them, just simply click on the link on this page. Hey, let's get back to the program. And before the break, we were talking about the Catholic Church.
When we talk about the Catholic Church here, and you have to when you talk about this incident, You may have heard this, Alexandra, since you've been following UFO stories, but many researchers tell me the Vatican has a huge library of UFO material. Do the authors know anything about that?
I will ask them. I've heard something to that effect, and I've even read quotes from certain Vatican members who would like to release that information, but I can't recall the exact names and the quotes, but
they probably
know more about this, and I'll ask them. O que o Jerry está querendo saber é se vocês estão por dentro ou sabem mais sobre essa,
you know, intellectual circles in the Jesuit community. There's absolutely no evasion to try to deny that they're very upfront and honest about their preoccupation with the UFO phenomenon, and that they make no bones about their interest in studying this and how it may impact human civilization. And in fact, the Catholic Church owns a big observatory in the Arizona desert and has their own, you know, observatory and makes their own observations. I'll get the name of it again in a second. And furthermore, that there is a Vatican spokesperson who appears routinely on television discussing the UFO phenomenon as real, as a potential extraterrestrial phenomenon.
Yeah, I knew that because of...
Conrado o quê?
Balducci.
Conrad Balducci.
Yeah. Paula Harris, who does some things for us, she has mentioned to him before, and it is interesting about the history of the Catholic Church and UFOs.
See, the thing is that the Catholic Church is a huge community, and actually there is a branch of it that's very intellectual and very scientific. And
sure, they have all kinds of universities and the university system. So, and I imagine it's even more ingrained in Europe than it is here.
Yeah, I would think so. I know a lot of kids in Europe who went to Jesuit boarding schools. Actually, no, I know a kid here who went to a Jesuit community college. I mean, there's a lot of Catholics in America.
Sure, sure. We're going to have to wrap this up here pretty soon, but basically, I want to talk about heavenly lights for a minute.
I'm going to tell you what I think the most salient and interesting part of this story that didn't get to be told, I don't think, in the previous book, is that several months before the apparitions occurred, there were certain psychic communities, because as you may know, like Theosophy and Madame Blavatsky and, you know, seances and, you know, spiritualism and and was sort of a fad in the earlier part of the 20th century. And there were many circles in Portugal of people who would get together and have seances and things like that. And so several months before the apparitions actually took place, two or three of these groups put in the personal section, in the back of the paper, the Fatima apparitions were placed in a personals ad at the back of a Lisbon newspaper, Lisbon being the largest city in Portugal, 64 days before the first apparition took place. The message in the personals ad said that something very important would take place on May 13th. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Then, on the morning of May 13th, in three separate Porto papers, which is the second city in Portugal and closer to where the events took place, there were three personal ads in three separate newspapers that said something very big was going to happen on that day. And these ads were all placed by different spiritualist groups who had been in contact with interdimensional spirits that told them to watch out for something major to occur on the 13th of May.
Is there any evidence at all that these events could have been fraudulent? They didn't happen.
I really doubt it, because you're talking about, I think, a minimum of 30,000 witnesses.
But how did they talk to just the one little girl if there were 30,000 people there?
They put announcements saying that something very big was about to happen, and predicted, I believe, the actual date of, June 13th as being the date. But let me just get that 100% clear from these guys. Hold on. Eu queria falar um pouquinho mais sobre aquelas que diziam os espíritos, as aparições, quantos meses tinha
apurado. É impossível recusar a existência de jornais impressos na época, não é? Que dizem claramente que 64 dias depois vai acontecer um evento em 13 de maio.
Ok, so they're saying no. I mean, fraud, as you're suggesting, I mean, these, there was an ad placed in a Lisbon newspaper 64 days in advance of the first event that from a spiritualist group that had nothing to do with a peasant sheep herding little girl 100 miles away. Okay? And they predicted that something big was going to happen on May 13th. And then as far as fraud, I mean, yeah, I'd say that probably if there's any fraud in the story, it's what the Jesuits turned the story into. You know, this is where they make the distinction between Fatima 1, which is what they discovered in the actual documents at the sanctuary, where the children and the families and the witnesses at that time in the 1917 and 1918 were interviewed by the prelates and the bishops. That's Fatima 1, where, she's wearing stuff that Mother Mary would never wear, like she's got a mini skirt on. I mean, it's all very, very strange. If you read the book, it's not how the Virgin, appears in normal Catholic iconography, okay? And then there's Fatima 2, which is the story that's come down to us over the succeeding decades, which is a story that was essentially made up by the Jesuit branch of the Catholic Church as propaganda for the Catholic Church. I mean, one of the big things that they were trying to do was to quote-unquote consecrate Russia to the Catholic or to the Christian faith, and that was supposed to be one of the predictions of the Fatima apparitions, and it could be argued that the fall of the Berlin Wall and the end of the Soviet Union is a fulfillment of that prophecy, because now people in Russia are free to practice Christianity again, where they were not under the Soviet regime. And so the Jesuits chalked this up as a success of their propaganda movement. And the other one is the prediction that the Pope would be assassinated, which you know, the actual language of the prediction was that a bishop in white would be murdered, but a bishop in white is not exactly the Pope, but could be construed to be the Pope, and indeed there was an assassination attempt on Pope John II, and in fact a year before her death, which was last year, and which incidentally was one day before I finished translating this book, which was very eerie, and I had a very eerie experience where I had a flashback of her entire life and how her cloistered life, where she had been gagged in a Carmelite nunnery or one of these places where you have to take a vow of silence and you're never allowed to speak again, and which she was forced to do. But Pope John Paul made a big deal out of propagating that phantom of prediction that the attempt on his life had been predicted by Our Lady. The third secret has never been revealed.
Does anyone have a clue what this third secret might be?
I think that they do have a clue, but I think that
it's kind of
funny the way they leave it in their book. Indica saber cuál que es el tercer secreto.
Os mais sábios deste mundo, se tivéssemos a chave completa.
Olha, uma coisa é verdade, é que não é o Papa.
Yes, not
isso realmente não aconteceu.
Não foi o Papa. Yeah. In her prediction about the bishop in white, it was in an apocalyptic scenario, a ruined country, of mountainous land. And this, of course, was not the case in the assassination attempt on Pope John Paul. I mean, he was in the middle of St. Peter's Square and in Rome, which was hardly a city in ruins at the time. So as far as that, manipulation of what she, what the predictions were, and if that's the second one, then it hasn't, then that one, whatever that prediction, the second one, it hasn't come to pass yet. And as far as the third one, I think they might have a gag order on that one, frankly.
Ask them.
They are very funny about the third or final secret. Number one and number two of the second secret, and then there's the third secret that they won't even talk about.
Who would issue a gag order?
Ele está querendo saber porque me parece que vocês não têm a liberdade de discutir o terceiro segredo. E se vocês têm alguma pressão em cima de vocês de não discutir...
Os textos de 1917 relativos ao segredo ou às partes do segredo...
Que era só umas palavrinhas, que em 1917 eram umas palavrinhas, e que ele em 1942 multiplicou em 3.
Mas vocês... Para não falar ou revelar o terceiro segredo.
It's quiet.
Yeah. They're just saying that what they've noted is the difference between the actual language of the predictions and how in the original interviews that exist in the documents of the sanctuary from the 1917 and 1918, and how they came down the pike in the history of the church during the 20th century as a prediction of the consecration of Russia to Christianity and an attempt on the life of the Pope. And when I asked them if there has been any pressure put on them by an entity or group or individual or anybody about discussing or revealing the third secret, you heard the biggest silence so far.
They're not going to talk.
No.
What about the third book?
What is about the third book? O que se de que se trata?
Foi abaixo a chamada. Nós voltei.
Coisa de não falar ou revelar o terceiro segredo.
Não.
Da minha parte nunca.
Não. They're saying no, that they have never.
Não, porque eles viraram aquilo para o Vaticano, acham que, claro. Ora, vamos lá ver, se eles consideram que as atenções são de Nossa Senhora, o segredo só tem
coisa de não falar ou revelar a terceira. The Vatican is unfazed, essentially, by their work. And, as I said, there are even members of the Vatican that are very actively and openly discussing the UFO phenomenon on television, and that there was no, that they have not suffered any undue pressure to not discuss the third secret, that they've already pointed out the differences between the real testimonies and what has come down as being the secrets of Fatima, and it's really like not, you know, there are many inconsistencies, and it's just yet another inconsistency that exists within, you know, Catholicism, period. I mean, it's, the faith is full of factual, you know, inconsistencies. So it's really not hard to lose faith when your faith is based on factual inconsistencies.
The first book was Heavenly Light, second book Celestial Secrets. They have a name for the third book?
Yeah, ele queria saber mais sobre o terceiro livro e qual que é o título e de que se trata.
O título é Fátima Revisitada. Aliás, é o título original em inglês.
Okay, so it'd be Fatima Revisited.
As aparições no mito, na religião e na ciência, e versado para inglês para ser publicado.
Tá bom. Okay, whereas the first book is drawing the many similarities between the Fatima apparitions and the UFO phenomenon, the book that I translated is a very rigorous historical study of the apparitions that have been taking place in that region for millennia prior to Fatima, and also the real history behind the evolution of what actually happened and the myth of the Fatima apparitions as they currently are set in Catholic dogma, which they say was a complete Jesuit concoction. The third book is called Fatima Revisited, and it's already been translated. I don't think it's published yet. And it is, it's the Portuguese title is actually Fatima and Science, and it's an interdisciplinary work with many scientific colleagues from many fields in Europe and the United States. And it is Fatima within the larger context of all of these altered state-type experiences, Marian apparitions, out-of-body experiences, what are they called? What is it, when people die, the Elizabeth...
Near-death experience.
When people die and they come back to life.
Reincarnation.
No. That thing when you see all kinds of stuff and then you come back, that phenomenon.
Okay, after-death experience.
Yeah, near-death experience.
Yeah.
And that whole cluster of what I, you know, what have to, I would call that, and many in the New Age world call that, like, the fourth dimension or fourth density type imaginal realm was a term that Professor, you know, PhD John Mack from Harvard used, the imaginal realm experiences, and he was actually working on communicating with the dead when he himself was struck and killed by a drunk driver in London last year. And he actually had joked a week prior to his death with his colleagues. I was actually friends with him and his colleagues about how he thought he could probably get some more work done from the other side than from this side. And about a week later he was killed, which is interesting. So the next Fatima book is translated in English and ready to be published. And it's exploring Fatima within the larger context of these imaginal realm experiences, and not really propounding a very narrow ufological interpretation of these events.
Well, we look forward to that, and tell them thank you for an interesting discussion. Our interpreter was Alexander Bruce, and on the line from Portugal we have Fina D'Amato and Joaquin Hernandez. It's been an interesting show for sure.
We'll let them say their goodbyes as we close the show. Thanks for listening, everyone.
Okay, thank you all around.
This program was edited by Jane Swartley. Until next time, this is Jerry Pippin. Cheers.